Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in. This is Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. We have our panelists here, and I'm going to do a quick introduction in just a minute, but Before we get started, I want to thank all those, certainly the panelists for sure, for their time, expertise. I'm really looking forward to this event. I have been for a while to be able to put together a group of panelists like this to, in a time like this, to discuss a lot of the major issues that are taking place in the real estate industry and lending. Certainly for sure, what you're going to see for those participants that are joining us is the only one we're missing at the moment is Rick Arviello, who is the CEO and founder of New American Funding. He's a little bit delayed, so he's probably going to be joining us about 11:15, 11:20, and he'll be able to address and any kind of the lending information that we're going to talk about as well. And Rick, maybe looks like he may be jumping in now. So we need to get Rick on as a panelist. So if you're listening, Rick, if you could go to the link, I'm not sure, he may be in as a participant. We need you as a panelist there. Hopefully you can dive in and get that extra link and go from there. Anyway, so what we're going to do, for those that are joining us, thank you. We have, I think, several hundred that signed up and want to participate. That's wonderful because you'll get exposure and direct information from the experts here on the panel, and we're going to have a variety of discussions. The theme of this summit today is, how to adjust, adapt, and succeed. So we're going to go through the process. We're going to have some back and forth questions and answers with the panelists. And then about the last 15 minutes, we're going to go about 40 to 45 minutes. We will open up the comment section for the participants if anyone has any comments or questions for our panelists. That will be the time to do it. And so prepare your questions for that. Looks like Rick is with us now. Hey, Rick.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you and see you now.
Okay. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Well, I'm glad you could join us, Rick. Thank you.
My pleasure. I was actually on. I don't know why you couldn't hear me. I could hear and see you guys. You couldn't hear and see me. So
yeah.
I just came back in.
Well, thanks again. So what we're going to do is we're going to get started, and we're going to go through a series of questions. But I really want to, again, thank the panelists for taking the time. You guys are, out there every single day dealing with this, so we're interested, and I know that participants are too, to really get a better idea of what's going on, how are we adjusting, adapting, and then how are you going to succeed coming out of COVID-19. And so it's going to be, it's going to be important that we get as much guidance as we can, and I know the participants are going to participate, and they're looking forward to that as well. So let's get started. Let's do this if I can. I'm going to ask each of you if you could just take a minute or so, and if you could, for the benefit of the panelists and each other, if you could give us a little bit about your background, title, and really areas of responsibility, if you could just take a minute or so. And I'll start with you if I can, Jordan. First of all, Jordan, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Joe, thank you so much for having me. I'm the Deputy Chief Economist at the California Association of Realtors. So many of you know my boss, Leslie Appleton Young. But what I do at CAR really falls into three or four primary buckets. So I oversee the kind of market research in terms of the MLS data and public record data on closed transactions, discounting prices, all of that good stuff. We also do a lot of survey research at CAR where we're, going out and talking to both members and more importantly to, or maybe not more importantly, but also equally importantly to consumers. I am involved in our government affairs efforts too. So all of our advocacy on behalf of housing, I will power a lot of the analysis that goes into this kind of policy debates. And then we do a little bit of the internal analytics as well, just in terms of how things are going within our actual organization.
Great. Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it. Nancy?
Sure. Good morning. Thank you for having me, Joe. I'm Nancy Robinson, and I'm the Regional Vice President for Coldwell Banker Realty here in Northern California. We're broken into regions, and I cover the region that's the San Francisco Peninsula, Silicon Valley, Monterey Bay, which is about 25 offices, 14 managers, and about 1,700 agents.
Very good. Thank you again for joining us, Nancy. Mark.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I have to apologize. It's Von Kane. I'm sorry, Mark. I apologize for that.
That's all right, Joe. Like I said, it's my wife 20 years to take the name, too. I mean,
thank you, Mark.
Yeah, it's Mark Von Kane. I'm the operating partner for KW Bay Area Estates and KW Coastal Estates. Also have a property management company, Forbes Property Management. I'm the managing broker and operating partner for the Keller Williams office. We have two GMs and approximately 350 agents underneath us. Been doing this for about 27 years. I also sell real estate too. I have a pretty large production team as well. And thank you, Joe, for allowing me part of this panel. I'm very humble and impressed with these industry leaders that I'm on this panel with. So thank you. I don't know if you pulled my name out of a hat, but I'm definitely honored to be here. Thank you, Joe.
No, you're a great presence in the Bay Area, so we're happy to have you, and we're, you know, thank you again for taking the time. We're going to look forward to your wisdom and feedback. So let's jump up, Mr. Don Yoakum.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Joe, and thank you for having me. I'm a team leader with eXp Realty. I am building an organization in our cloud-based brokerage across the country, now in 16 states for myself and also Canada, and just really appreciate the opportunity to be here and share what I can to add value.
Very good. Thank you again, Don. Appreciate it. Brian Crane, welcome.
Hey, Joe. Thanks a lot. It's great to be back on your show. I'm Brian Crane. I'm the CEO for Intero. We have 18 company-owned offices with about 85 employees, including 25 managers. And we have about 1,200 agents in the company store. And then we have 50 franchise offices around the country with over 2,000 agents.
Very good. Thanks again, Brian. Appreciate your time as well. Chris Trapani, welcome.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks as well for having me on the show. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I am the co-founder and CEO of Serena Group Real Estate. We mainly cover San Mateo County, Santa Clara County, Santa Cruz. We do have some coverage as far south as San Diego and up to Sacto. But our core offices, we have 8 here in the Bay Area, amazing support staff of 50, and over 350 experienced agents.
Very good. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Jen. And Mr. Rick Arviel, thank you for joining us. We've already had some questions in the panelists before you jumped on, so you're going to be in the hot seat today, Rick. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Joe. Do you want me to go through my, you know, background, or is it?
Yeah, if you could just give us, if you don't mind giving us a quick overview of your title, area responsibility, and New American Funding, kind of the branches and people you're responsible for, that'd be great.
Sure. So Rick Arviello, I'm the CEO of New American Funding, run the company with my wife, Patty Arviello, who is the president. Just because I pulled CEO out of the hat, she pulled president out of the hat. I actually work for her. We are homegrown, 3,300 employees at this point. We have two channels, all retail. So we've got our call centers, 4 call centers across the United States with about 320 agents, and we've got about 200 branches outside distributed retail, and that's another 800 plus agents. We are a direct seller servicer, which is a point that should not be missed in this current climate. And hopefully some questions asked can drill into why that's an advantage. And I feel like New American Funding has an advantage in this market just because of the fact that we are a direct seller servicer. We currently have a $32 billion servicing portfolio. We service about 140,000 customers. And when I say we service, we actually service. We don't use a sub-servicer, like a lot of companies do. A little over $15 billion in production last year. Sights on $20 billion plus this year.
Very good. Thank you again, Rick. I appreciate your time because there's a lot of questions around the lending environment as it relates to real estate, of course, and then even more specifically, we're going to get into the jumbo, which is changing, seems like every single day. Well, let's jump in. Let's talk. What I'd like to do first is this ability to kind of adjust in this environment. So, you know, what types of things are you guys doing? You know, obviously some counties are different, but I know right now in the inability to list or represent buyers, that's obviously a challenge for many counties. So I'd like to hear from each of the panelists on the real estate side, you know, how are you guys adjusting to this right now in terms, and again, we'll also, some of you may be representing some counties and states and areas that things may not have changed that much. So I'll start with Chris, if I would. Give me a little bit of idea of what the company's doing to adjust in this time.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. So, you know, it's been something that obviously, this is learn by doing, the epitome of learn by doing. So the day the SIP was announced in Santa Clara County, which is kind of like our epicenter, roughly the day before St. Patrick's Day, we took a really hard look at it, had our legal team look at it. And, you know, at first, I mean, it was kind of unclear at different points because it was evolving, but, you know, we stayed very close to our legal team as information was coming out and made the decision soon thereafter, within a day or two, to completely shut down all of our offices. You know, I think at first there was a thought that we might be able to keep some skeleton crew there and keep things clean. But the reality was, as it evolved, that wasn't the, not only wasn't the responsible thing to do, it wasn't the legal thing to do the way we interpreted the order. So our offices of Serena Group have basically been closed since at least March 17th. And the good news is, you know, last year we had introduced some, like, for example, online, like bill.com, for example, where we can transact financially online and, you know, pay agents commissions, you know, through that platform. Brokermint, another program to kind of run our transactions on a tech platform. Now, you know, we did get some resistance, and I understand, you know, a lot of us don't like change. But the interesting thing is, you know, once this all started and when our agents realized we were able to actually transact and they could still get paid, they've been very grateful that those things were installed. So one thing that I want to say, though, because we can get down to the granular of, you know, being able to show vacant properties or not and all, you know, it's probably rather redundant. But I'll tell you one thing that I heard, which I think is really, really true. You know, Scott Galloway, who's a professor at NYU, said things won't change as much as they will accelerate. While other crises reshape the future, COVID-19 is just making the future happen faster. And so I think that really carries over in a lot of ways because, you know, we're all recognizing that, you know, we've all been working mobily, but a lot of people have been resistant to really make that change. This has forced all of us, I'm saying myself included, to leverage the platform, whether like the one we're on Zoom or Google Hangout, and realizing how much ground we can cover. I mean, the leverage with the platforms is really profound when you're able to have two or three meetings a day with people from all over California and not even have to get out of your home. So I think, you know, with that foresight, it's more looking forward, saying a lot of things that were probably going to happen are just happening faster, and being able to kind of figure out what those things are and adapt and adjust to those changes, not just during the SIP, but coming, accelerating out, and really, frankly, for the future of the brokerage industry moving forward.
Very good. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the observation and feedback. Nancy, you want to give us an idea how it's affecting you guys and kind of the adjustments being made?
Yeah, to what Chris's point was, this has certainly been accelerating change. And there's a lot of things that we were already in the process of, you know, changing our structure for how we pay commissions to our agents. This has accelerated that change. And like to Chris's point, there were people who weren't necessarily happy about having to make these changes, but now it's a forced change and it's actually for the better. So we too did an immediate closure of offices to comply, but then it was this constant need to be able to adapt to what was coming down the pike. We also needed to make sure we were staying on top of proper disclosures. So again, in touch with our legal team, on a daily basis. They were working round the clock, analyzing different forms that Carr was creating and coming out with, creating some of our own that we felt better served our agents. And so those were some of the things we're working on. We also did a huge pivot for our training and education, because what we have found right now is that agents are having the time to really spend in their business, inside and seeing, am I prepared to do a virtual listing presentation? Am I prepared to do a virtual open house? So our education and training team's been working around the clock to move everything into a virtual format. So, you know, we've done big events where we've had all of our agents come in and we've done these huge education expos, and you know, they cost a ton of money, and now we've been able to pivot and we've had six of them all virtual. And the way we deliver education has changed tremendously and had a great impact. Yeah. So those are some of the things that we've been working on, is really about pivoting and making a change in how we deliver, you know, services to our agents.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Nancy. And one of the things I'll next keep it going is that it is amazing with this technology. One of the blessings in disguise that I see right away is that we're able to do things like this. People are able to adjust with the use of technology. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, it would have looked a lot different. So that, thank goodness we do have the resources now to move this training, communication, the way we operate, and use technology as best we can. So I'll move on to Mark. What about, how's things affecting on your side, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing the same thing. I mean, it's just information. I mean, I got to tell you, I was thinking that we'd be a little slower during this time period, but we're busier than ever with meetings and ensuring that our agents are constantly connected, daily check-ins. I mean, we're... You know, again, as managing broker, if I wasn't in tune with our legal department beforehand, we've definitely been in tune with them now. Just staying on top of the forms constantly, with our trainings. I mean, being one of the number one training companies, we almost have so many trainings, it's ridiculous at some point. Well, we've kind of doubled up on that. And again, just ensuring that our agents have that daily ability to connect, trying to stay on top of all the ongoing changes that we've had. And also, you know, with the whole SIP, I mean, it's an evolution that we're dealing with. And we are dealing with multiple counties under our environment as well. So when we're dealing with Monterey, it's challenging. You know, they can only show vacant properties and they can't even have any furniture in the house if it's vacant. You know, we've loosened it up a little bit here where we can do the vacancy part of it. But to answer your question, you know, we've adapted to the point of embracing technology, which we should have done before. And moving forward in that. And I also agree, as Chris and Nancy had said, I mean, we're going to be coming out of this leaner, better, stronger than ever before, utilizing these the technologies to really enhance all of our businesses. And as a from the broker side of it, it's really interesting how we're going to come out of this. I mean, you know, last year we signed a 10-year lease on a 15,000 square foot brick and mortar. Although it's pretty empty nowadays, you sit there, even myself, I mean, hey, remote's not a really bad way to go, and we're actually being more efficient now. So it's really, ourselves are in this too with our agents, is really educating them on how do we tap into technology, be more efficient, and then how are we going to really fine tune that as we come out of this this situation, because it is going to change the way we do business. And I believe potentially do the better as well. It's going to force us to be more efficient.
Good. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Don?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, because eXp is a cloud-based brokerage, in terms of how we're doing our business, other than the obvious showing the homes, it's pretty much been business as usual. And so in terms of how we interact as agents with the company and get paid and such, that's all... been without change. We had already set up to be a cloud-based organization. That being said, because we're a nationwide company, we have all different kinds of situations by county, in terms of, in some counties you can show vacant properties, in other counties like Placer you can show occupied properties if you have them sign a proper disclosure.
Okay.
You know, as Chris had said, I think, you know, this situation is going to certainly accelerate change in our industry. and we're going to need to adapt. And, you know, I guess the main message that we're giving our agents is, what can you do, right? So your circumstances may be different from your peers based on the county that you're in or your current, your own circumstance, but what can you do to be of service? So in some areas, like Sacramento, you may be able to sell a tenant, a home that they're living in. One thing that we do have because of the crisis is historically low interest rates, right? So in some cases, we're actually putting people into homes, into home ownership for less than they're paying in rent.
Yeah.
And so, and there was a, in Sacramento is one of the counties you can't show occupied properties, right? But if they're already occupying the property, it works perfect.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to adapt. You have to ask those questions of, you know, what can we do to be of service to our clients? And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I do have some concern that there's going to be some pretty serious economic fallout amongst a lot of industries. I think we all can feel pretty fortunate that we are in, quote, essential industry. And when people are transacting businesses, it's not for small reasons. It's because they're getting married or divorced or having a job transfer or some pretty significant event. And so it's not an act of convenience, usually. It's although it can be, it's usually because of a life event. And so I think we're at least pretty fortunate that as long as we look for those opportunities to serve, we can be okay. You know, we're certainly in most areas, we're dealing with a reduction in volume. Mm-hmm. I would say most of the counties that I operate in, the volume as a whole in the board is off about 40%, and the fallout is actually a little bit greater. So in some areas, it's as low as 50%. In the area where I live, the volume's not off at all. So it really varies. But I think the key thing here is just, you know, looking at where the opportunities to serve are, being willing to adapt, and just doing the best you can given the circumstances that we have.
Very good. Thank you, Don. Brian, you want to take a couple minutes to tell us kind of how you guys are working around this or adjusting as well as you can?
Absolutely. You know, I'll echo a lot of what my colleagues have said on the call here. But one of the things that we've noticed, and it reminds me of a Warren Buffett quote, the chairman of our parent company, he says, "Only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked." And I think that companies as well as agents in this time have really had to focus in on you know, what their capabilities are. Immediately for us, when we knew we were going into a shelter-in-place environment, our primary focus initially was the safety of our staff and our agents, and most importantly, the public, as we navigate this thing. We knew that a lot of our agents and a lot of our clients didn't have the option or luxury to wait until this thing ended. As one of my colleagues had just said, some people have to get it done. Some people have to go out and get working. And so we knew that. Recognize that from the get-go, and we put a plan together. We immediately kind of leveraged our technology to put a SIP compliant transaction together. And we leveraged not only technology, but agents that were already technology oriented and centered in technology, along with our legal team. And we collaborated on a webinar a couple of days after SIP started on March 7th. So our people have been educated on the process. And as we all know, that process was shifting on a daily basis. So things were changing on a daily basis. And our legal team was on a webinar pretty much every day, you know, discussing the differences, the changes from day to day. So I think our agents have weathered this. For those that are interested in working, and some are not, and we respect that. Some are laying low, but some of them have clients that want to move, and they have personal needs where they want to continue to work. We're ensuring that they have the tools they need to work in a safe environment, and we're encouraging them to follow all the mandates and keep everybody safe. So So we've had a good run, and you know, we've had a tremendous adoption of technology. You know, technology is often something that think is a luxury, and now it's an absolute importance. And our agents have embraced that, and it's been kind of an exciting time actually to witness the amount of engagement that we've had. So that's great. A little background on what we've been doing.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, it isn't amazing how subscriptions for Zoom, and we won't talk about Netflix, but all these are going up and up and up and up. But I mean, in some cases, this has forced a lot of people that maybe have been reluctant, right, to use technology, to communication tools, to do things that a lot of us, or some of us, may have thought, you know, this was essential a couple of months ago. My guess is if you took a survey, you wonder how many people would think, boy, this has really made an adjustment in my life and my job right now. Rick, I know there's a bunch of changes, boy, in the lending world. So give us an idea how you pivoted quickly. I know you did.
Well, I think that, you know, what everyone said really resonates with me, because we went through the same thing. I mean, we're rethinking our commercial real estate and our lease obligations around the country. Do you really need to come in? The thing that was the most shocking to me, I think, when we moved everyone home, was how our productivity jumped to the roof. Now, we don't have the barriers that the real estate community has, but, you know, just to give you an example, our stretch goal for March was to fund 5,800 loans, meaning stretch goal, meaning we're probably not going to hit this, but let's just throw it out there. And we closed 7,000. And this month, our stretch goal is 8,500. That's $2,000 loans more than I've ever closed in a month in our company's history. So just getting people out of the distraction of an office, or, you know, they're not taking the time to get ready and those types of things, has really been a boon to our productivity. It's literally off the charts. So I'm excited. And we pulled our call center agents, you know, to see who wanted to stay at home after this, uh-huh, who was anxious to get back in the office. And 66% of our agents said they either wanted to work at home permanently or, wow, work at home at least part of the time. So it's not only an advantage for us, but it's an advantage to them. And they're recognizing that. So we're excited to see where this leads in terms of our lease obligations.
Good. Great. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. I mean, we talked, you guys kind of in your opening statements about how this is affecting and some of the adjustments was, you know, how do you keep managers, agents motivated, kind of energized, trained? I mean, I know, again, the technology is great for training and communication, but in an industry where I think most of us would agree it's difficult, you know, we have a small percentage of people that are doing the majority of the business. Our industries are very similar that way. How in this environment are you keeping agents engaged as much as you can and kind of motivated and interested in what they're doing? And of course, then there's the other distraction is life. You know, hopefully everybody on this webinar and everybody associated with this webinar, for instance, is safe and well. I mean, you have this concern of health and your family and friends and loved ones. And it's an extension now of our employees and our coworkers and the people that we partner with. So out of all that, it's a little overwhelming. What's the message? I mean, from the leadership, it should be coming down, right? What's the message to keep people engaged? What are some of the things maybe I could ask you guys that you're really trying to, from the top down, bring down so that people stay engaged and as motivated as they can in an environment like this? And I'll start with you, Mark. What are you doing?
You know, it is body, mind, and soul, right? I mean, you really have to look at all that. I think definitely through technology that we've already talked about has brought us all together. And I feel within our company, these constant communications that we're doing has actually enhanced our culture and the morale, because we're actually connecting more so than we were before. Obviously, you're not going to replace the physical contact on that, but certain things that we're doing, you know, we kind of got robbed on our award ceremony that we were doing, because we had it scheduled to be done right when the SIP came out. So this Thursday night, we're doing a virtual Zoom big award ceremony. You know, today we've created our fit club, and although we're going to be practicing social distancing, we're meeting over at Main Street Bridge, and we're going to head up to the dam and stay our 6 feet. So I think, yes, there's a technology real estate side of it that we're also focused on with the training, But I think it goes beyond that, because if we don't keep the sanity that we have in this new environment, it's going to be that much more challenging. So, yeah, we're trying to be creative of how do we do that. And I feel that the constant communication and everything else that we've done has really enhanced that morale. And it's important to consider the other factors than just the real estate that's part of this.
Very good. And I'm not forgetting about you, Jordan. I'll get to you.
No problem.
I'm going to have you jump in just a minute where we're going to talk about all the fun economic things here. Nancy, what about you?
So I think, you know, the real question is how to keep your culture thriving without the ability to physically come together. Mm-hmm. And Mark, I too was in a position where we had a really large award event planned. It was the week that it all came down, we ended up having to cancel that event, and a lot of people were really disappointed. So I think the key is that people are still needing human interaction. And so we've had to pivot, and obviously we're doing daily communication, whether it be through education and training, or even doing, you know, coffee chats, or, you know, wine and cheese events in the evening for our agents. You know, coming together virtually has been super important, but more important too is to recognize who's not coming to these events. Who are we not from? You know, a lot of our agents are single and live by themselves. And so, you know, my leadership team has had to really analyze who it is that they're hearing from or they're not hearing from, and do a lot of reaching out. So we've made it a priority to be in contact constantly with each and every one of our agents to check to see how they're doing. With that said, you know, a lot of great things and a lot of creativity's come out of this. So this has allowed us to not only, you know, kind of put our creative hats on and how can we make this interesting and fun and engaging, but then it's also allowed us to be more productive. So for example, you know, the Peninsula region typically has office meetings on Mondays. I can usually go to one at a time. I am now able to hit six offices and their meetings in one Monday. And that's a wonderful thing for me to have that kind of interaction. So, you know, again, people still need this human interaction, and it's we're looking at different creative ways to making sure we're touching all of our agents all the time.
Very good. Thank you, Nancy. Chris?
Yeah, thank you. I just, I appreciate the comments to this question already, but it's really been critically important to lead and over communicate during this time. And, you know, leading independent contractors, which are the agents, can be really challenging. Right. And, you know, I imagine some leadership might have struggled with that early on in different places and maybe was a bit more silent. But I think over these 5 weeks, that's maybe come back to create more challenges, right? It's almost like being in an escrow where you know there's going to be a problem and you sit on it. Instead of actually dealing with it early on, it actually creates more problems down the road. So, you know, as difficult and sacrificial as these decisions have needed to be, I mean, when March 16th, 17th came, look, I was an agent too. And I thought, what are you talking about? We can't sell houses. Like, I mean, should try to psychologically get your mind around that fact. But, you know, so in this unknown time, you know, the voice and thought leadership has really been essential. And one more thing that, you know, we've really amplified has been, you know, internal. We have a Cereno University, and I know all the companies have great training. But I think training there and engaging more agents and managers to contribute to that has really brought people together. And so some days we have two sessions a day, and it's just interesting to see the attendance. I'm sure the other speakers would affirm this, but we're having more people in these trainings, you know, 50, 100, 200 people, even at our weekly regional or sales meetings, because of the technology. It's just so fascinating. We're actually having more people participating in these trainings and meetings than would have when we're down at, you know, the local pizza place serving a breakfast.
Right.
And so, you know, it's really been fascinating, but I think over communicating has actually been, even if you have nothing new to say, our son attends Bellarmine High School in San Jose, and early on, you know, the messages, sometimes the daily or every other day messages said the same thing, but it was just the communication that made everyone feel like there was a voice out there leading them.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Chris. Don, what about you?
Yeah, I would I would certainly echo the communication piece of it that Chris and Nancy are talking about there. And it depends on each individual agent situation, how they're spending this time. Like Nancy was saying, some people are in a position where they can really think more strategically. And I do think we have a unique window of opportunity to do that. Most agents are not very strategic in their business. They tend to be very tactical and kind of go for what is in front of them at the moment. And so maybe this is refreshing from that perspective to be able to really reflect on their business and maybe certainly readjust. In regards to the communication piece, I've asked a number of my leaders to form groups of 8, 10, 12, where they have a weekly meetup. And so it is kind of under the theory of sort of, like Nancy was saying, sort of no man left behind, or woman left behind, for that matter. It is, I think there's so much anxiety right now among our society. If we can just ensure that people don't fall through the cracks, and at least are given the opportunity to engage and connect and learn. They're like everybody else has said, we're having folks probably getting more educated than they have in this last month than most have in the last year. Most of the time agents are running around like a one-armed paper hanger. So it is, it's great for them to be able to settle in and be able to attend a webinar that will be able to help them deliver value to their clients. So, there are good things that are coming out of it for sure.
Good to hear. Thank you. And we'll keep moving along. We'll try to stay on time to try to keep it right about an hour. Rick, how about you? I mean, from the leader top, I know you and Patty are working on a daily basis with this. What are you seeing and doing to try to keep the crew kind of from executive management down?
I think communication is really the key. Communicate often. A lot of our leaders have really embraced that. It's interesting. When we all moved home, I still come to the office every day because there's nobody here. So I'm more socially distanced here than anywhere else I can go. For the first week, maybe after we socially distanced, my calendar was pretty clear. And now I'm busier than I've ever been. I mean, literally every hour on the hour, I've got something going on, and our team is really kind of taking the lead to do that as well and communicate out. And, you know, we're getting so much positive feedback from the field because there, if you think about it, you know, we're trying to run our businesses and make sure that we don't miss a beat, but the people that work, you know, our associates working from home, you know, they're in the abyss. They don't know what's going on unless we tell them. So I think it's vitally important, as everyone's mentioned here, to communicate often and effectively. And the feedback we're getting from the field is just so favorable. They're so appreciative that we're not letting them just linger on the vine, that we're doing a really good job of letting, especially on the lending side, where something is literally changing every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's this loan program is now gone, or this has changed, or these FICO bands are under stress, or, you know, it's just like every single day there's something going on. And so our team does a really good job of making sure everybody can get their mind around not just what's going on, but why it's going on. I think that that's almost more important. So they're just not being force fed changes. They understand, oh, I get it. So we try to do a really good job when it comes to that.
Great. Thanks, Rick. And we'll move to Brian quickly, and then we'll get to Mr. Levine. Brian?
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, I mean, I've been just really honored to lead a group of people that just stepped up big time. Everybody in our company is heavily engaged, and I'll echo what my colleagues had said about the attendance at webinars and that kind of thing. But everybody from our leadership to our staff, and today, by the way, is National Administrators Day. And so our staff has stepped up big time to help in engagement, and our leaders are doing the same. A couple of things that we've done that are a little bit different. We literally have a webinar every day, and we added a new show called Intero Now, and that show goes up on Wednesday. And We've done, I think this will be our fourth Intero Now show, where we're just giving, it's literally a kind of a show, and we're getting 600 people, 500 to 600 people or more on this show. So that's been exciting. Wow. One of the things that we're focused on as a company is keeping the realtors engaged in post-SIP, or what happens after SIP. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to keep them in the game right now so that when we come out of this, and we all know we will, that they're fired up and running as fast as possible at that point. We recently partnered with a gentleman by the name of Zha Zhang, who wrote a book called Rejection Proof. And Zha is he's got an app that many of our agents are taking advantage of. And it's basically a daily group collaboration app, which has just been a lot of fun to witness. Allows agents to interact with each other. It allows them to share photos about what they're doing. And the whole focus of it is to stay focused for at least 1 hour a day, of deep focus, 1 hour a day. And the challenge has been fun to watch and to engage our people with. So that, that's been awesome. And I think, you know, if we do this right, we're all going to come out of this thing in better shape.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian. Well, we're going to shift gears a little bit. And now that we've kind of got an idea of how people are adjusting, adapting, and some of the tools we're using and lines of communication, I want to thank Jordan for taking some time. So we'll get into some measures that we're starting to take and what are we going to look into with post-COVID. Jordan, if you could maybe give us a macro view of from an economic standpoint, what's happening kind of in the United States in general with real estate as it relates to COVID-19, and then maybe bring it to more of a microscopic level, if you will, to the Silicon Valley and the Bay Area where most of us operate.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think it's important to point out that this isn't, as we were talking about before, I think all the attendees showed up, is that it's not a 2008 all over again. This is, I view as an external shock that's happening to what was an otherwise relatively healthy economy vis-a-vis 2008, where we had, you know, lots of fundamental issues bubbling under the surface. We had households that were over-leveraged. We had a corporate sector that was also over-leveraged. We had households with zero savings rates, right? Yeah. So one of the upshots of that great recession was that it caused a lot of, you know, what was pretty painful, but for better or worse, we had a lot of deleveraging that happened, right? We had savings rates that came up from 0% and are still in the single digits, but much healthier than they were. And people had a cushion. That being said, there is, you know, deep negative impacts that we're seeing across the economy. And I think that the two biggest areas that we can point to from a data standpoint are that consumers have both had to pull back because of the shelter in place. And also, we're seeing lots of impacts on the income side, because the flip side is on the labor market side. And we've seen those unemployment claims shoot up to unprecedented levels. We've already, you know, accumulated more people filing for unemployment over the last 4 or 5 weeks than we've seen, you know, through the first half of the financial crisis, which went across basically a year and a half's worth of time. And so, yes, I do think that we have stronger fundamentals. And I know one of the questions in the chat was about foreclosures and all of that stuff, but I think we're not necessarily poised for those 40 and 50% declines in home prices that we saw last time that were really going to drive a lot of those strategic defaults and foreclosures. As long as your home's still worth more than you paid for it, you don't foreclose on it, right? You just sell it. And so I think that there will be some price impacts, but again, I don't think it's a 2008. And I got excoriated for this in like the comment section of a YouTube video the other day, but I'm still optimistic for housing on the back end of this thing. I think, you know, short run, we're going to feel the pain like all the other sectors of the economy. But, you know, when you look at the low rate environment that we're in, and I always joke about my dad's 12.5% mortgage rate that he actually used to be able to brag about, because some of his buddies had like 14, 15% in the early 80s. You put that together, I think, you know, with just the benefits of home ownership, which remain unchanged, right? This is still the number one way people accumulate wealth. And I think, just also on top of that, how much time we're spending in our home, housing is going to be even more important to us moving forward than it's been maybe you know, in the past. When I think about it from a Silicon Valley or a Bay Area specific standpoint, I think, you know, we've got bigger concentrations of sectors that will be less affected, right? We have a lot of resilience in terms of the structure of the Bay Area economy. And so I think that, you know, a lot of other parts of the state and nation don't necessarily have that feather in their cap to fall back on as a kind of source of stability or strength during challenging times. The flip side of that, though, is that we have a lot of high prices. And so a lot of the, you know, home buying is done in the jumbo category. And so from that standpoint, we're also going to feel the disproportionate negative impacts as well, right? So we've got that kind of underlying source of strength, but I think, you know, the tightness in jumbo lending, I think there are people who want to get out there and take advantage of these historically low rates. But you know, the programs are changing all the time, and you guys know about that better than me, and requirements moving all over the map. And so there's some people who just aren't able to take advantage. So it's kind of that double-edged sword, where in some ways our greatest strength, that we've got this great underlying economy, is also responsible for some of the big challenges, because we got also these big pumped up home prices and therefore the need for the jumbos.
Yeah. Thanks, Jordan. That's great. Great insight. And we'll come back to you in a minute. But this is a perfect segue for Rick to jump in talking about, Rick, maybe if you could give us, I mean, there's so much anxiety. We talked about that in life in general, what we're going through right now. But in our industry, obviously, financing is tied directly to real estate, vice versa. So maybe, Rick, you could give us, the panel and also the participants, an idea of, you know, kind of the environment in general with lending, maybe an overall kind of look. And then spend a little bit of time on jumbo. There's a lot of nervousness around that. We're seeing some of the investors exit or temporarily get out of the market. And if you could kind of give us some feedback and your read on that, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's like, it's a different issue every day. I mean, things are starting to normalize a little bit for the, you know, vanilla down the middle of the strike zone lending that's out there. You know, obviously up in Silicon Valley, you're going to be much more greatly impacted by the exit, the rapid exit of non-QM and the pullback of the jumbo opportunities. But other than that, what we're seeing is you really have to look at it channel specific and company specific on how they're being impacted by this. And I don't want to bore anybody by getting too far into the weeds, but whenever I talk about it to people that are interested, I kind of talk about it from the back forward, because one of the bigger impacts right now is servicing. If you think about the economics of a loan, I would approximate a quarter of it is servicing value, and that value is pretty much evaporated. And if you think about it, it's obvious. You know, you've got a lot of companies whose business is servicing loans, and you got this massive unknown out there. How many borrowers are going to ask to stop making their payments? And then what is the obligation of that servicer to advance those payments anyway? Mm-hmm. And these rules are just being written today. You know, you've got, and again, I don't want to get on my political soapbox, but you've got a FHFA regulator that doesn't want to support these businesses at all. He thinks all lending should be done by the big box banks, who right now shows why that's not a good idea. You know, when you've got a Wells Fargo saying, oh, we're done with jumbo. And you got Chase going, oh, we're not going to fund anybody under a 700 FICO. You know, you got all these things that are going on for the big box banks. That's not happening in independent mortgage makers. But the reason I brought up at the beginning of the show, important it is to know that your counterparty is a seller servicer. For us, we service our own loans. So if I was forced right now to sell my servicing either through an aggregator or through a co-issue arrangement, that bid is dropped to zero, and in some cases even negative value. They're saying government lending is potentially a liability. It's not even a doesn't even have any value at all, and that's just not true. There is value, but as a servicer myself, I can choose what value to apply to that servicing, which gives me a pricing advantage to a lot of people that are, you know, more subject to, you know, dealing with the subservicing community or the aggregator community that are dealing with the servicing and having to apply their own value. Another point I'd like to make out is, you know, I think that the messaging from the media has been very irresponsible about how this this forbearance works. You know, they don't talk about the fact that, yeah, but you got to make those payments up. I mean, you got to pay us back. And and oftentimes that's going to be, once we get on the other side of the forbearance, your payment's actually going to increase. Once you explain that to a borrower, which we do, the vast majority say, okay, never mind. And even the ones that say, hey, no, I still want I still want to be able to not make my payment, so put me in for the forbearance, more than half of them are still making their payments. They made their April payments, even though they asked for a forbearance. So, and then the other thing is, you know, they're saying, well, give them 6 months. We don't do that. And this is more work on us, because it's likely we're going to have to talk to all these people again. And there's thousands of people calling into our servicing center. We're saying, look, what you're doing by taking on a forbearance is you're digging yourself into a hole that you have to dig yourself out of. So take a 3-month forbearance. So it's a shallower hole. and hopefully on the other side of this, you only have 3 payments to make up and not 6 or 12. We're seeing some very encouraging things right now. All in, of 140,000 customers, less than 4% are in a forbearance.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And I'm hearing that on the rental side of the line, it's like 20 to 30%. Okay. So the homeowners are more resilient in this. Maybe they're less impacted. Maybe there's less service people in the service industries that are greatly impacted that are homeowners. So we're very, very encouraged on what we've seen so far. But the servicing aspect of it is a really big deal.
Okay.
And then the other problem, and this is especially prevalent with wholesale lenders, and I'm not here to disparage any channel. You know, every channel has pros and cons going into any different type of market. But the wholesale lenders got completely obliterated with what happened to rates in March. You know, they started to rise and then they just collapsed. And if you think about it, a wholesale lender, and these are the people that service the brokers out there, you know, they're working for 30, 40 basis points. And all of a sudden the rates collapse and they're sitting on 4 or 5 points of margin loss, and the broker moves the loan because they want to get to a better rate that's now available. So they have no gain on one side and they've got tons of costs on the other side. So they got shellacked by this deal. And you can see it in their pricing. I mean, normally brokers are priced a little through us, you know, 30, 40 basis points. Now they're as much as 2-3 points behind us because they've got to make up the money that they lost in March. So now the broker channel is under a lot of pressure. You know, the big banks, like I mentioned, they're just doing crazy, irrational things as far as I'm concerned. But it is what it is. And we're blessed. Because we've got a lot of proprietary relationships with balance sheet lenders, banks that want non-QM, and we're still writing non-QM paper, not as much as we were because there's less options available. Like, you're not doing 90% non-QM anymore, but you can get 80%. You can get, decent LTVs, decent, DTIs. You can still get those non-QM deals done, or at least we can. And then on the jumbo side, you know, Wells Fargo is a big deal. They were a huge player in the jumbo market. Interestingly, one of the reasons they backed away has nothing to do with their desire or appetite. It has to do with the asset cap placed on them because of the account scandal 4 or 5 years ago. So they've got so much business coming in, they have to make choices, and they're making the choice not to do the jumbo right now. At least that's my perception of it. But there still are a lot of banks that want it. Yeah. And we have like 7 lenders that want jumbo. Now, is the pricing going to be as sharp as possible? No, it doesn't need to be, because, you know, they're the pretty girl at the dance right now, you know, these jumbo banks. So they can price deals wherever they want. They're going to get them. But there's still, for companies that are flexible and have the relationships, there's still business that can be done in these categories that are under pressure right now.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick. Yeah, I think in general, too, I would say, each consumer just really needs to check with their independent bank or broker, whoever they're working with, to find out, you know, what's being offered, what kind of abilities, who are the investors are. Jumbo financing is still available. I think there's a perception that it all went away. It did not all go away. There's many lenders that still have it. Some of it's priced very well. As Rick said, some of it's not. So you have to be even more specific in that relationship with your lender right now before you get into contract or engage with whatever you're doing with financing, to make sure what abilities and options they have. Well, again, for sake of time, I'm going to kind of move quickly to, if we can, I'd like to ask you guys a little bit about, you know, coming out of this, what are some of the three or four things, if you could go through quickly? We talked about, you know, the adapting and adjusting, and now to succeed coming out of this, for sake of time, if you guys could kind of go through quickly, what are some of the, maybe the three to four things that, you know, listen, these are things we absolutely have to do, stay focused on, make adjustments on, so that when we get into post-COVID, that we could be in position to succeed and kind of either be in place where we left off, or hopefully take advantage of an opportunity and economically, what most people think could actually be in a real good, you know, upskill area. So, Chris, I'll ask you to start.
That's great, Joe. So I think we've talked about quite a bit of this, but first of all, for brokerages, I mean, we're all talking about getting controllable expenses, you know, adjusted, right? But I think in doing that, getting our team to realize where we're at and what we're doing, not only to survive, but accelerate out of it, is really important. I mean, historically, brokers have kind of managed by fear and have been afraid to really talk candidly with the agents. But I think this is a great opportunity to have these honest, transparent conversations. Getting everyone on the same page as much as possible. There's actually, we've talked about it today, there's an opportunity to create even more purpose, synergy, and momentum because of this difficult time, which is just really interesting. We've talked about training and educating, reinvesting in yourself. And I think some people are taking this time to recalibrate their priorities. Look, you know, it's like the higher power hit the pause button. And people are, you know, having some time to self-reflect, which is really, really healthy. I think for the brokerage, we've talked about essential for the businesses. We need to be asking ourselves, what is essential? And how can we best manage and deploy our precious resources to the benefit of our agents, clients, and community? And so, like, for Serino Group, we like to think that we're in real estate, but we're not really in the transaction business philosophically. So, in other words, we're constantly trying to figure out how to create the best company, but for the purpose of using the business to inspire and implement solutions to social issues via our 1% for Good program. And so it's really kind of looking at the deeper meaning in all of this, and how can we lean more into what each of our respective philosophies are, and kind of advancing that forward because of what's happened.
Great. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Mark?
You're muted.
There you go. We got you. Unmute there, Mark.
Wow, you would think with as many of these Zoom calls, that's like a rookie move right there, right? yeah, you know, listen, I mean, we got to look at what the new norm is. We're going to come out of this. I mean, the virus doesn't have a date stamp on it. It's not going to be like May 3rd, June 1st, whatever, it's gone. I mean, until they create a vaccine for this thing, it's going to be ongoing, and we have to adapt and pivot on what is that business going to look like after this. I mean, for agents, you know, forget about public open houses, right? So you've got to be creative. You got to think out of the box. From a brokerage standpoint, we got to continue to look at those resources that we can bring down to the agent level, and help them focus on how are they going to pivot their own business as we get out of this by embracing technology and all those things that we've already talked about. On the brokerages side of it, I'm going to say this, and I know we're kind of running out of time here. People always kind of question me when I say this. I mean, you know, we're all in the same, we all work for the same company. Right? It doesn't matter what hat we wear. We all work for real estate. That's what it's about. And like Chris says, we're social. It's about social. What are we doing out there to our communities? How are we really helping out the relationships that we're building with those around us? I'd like to see the brokerages come together closer on this, especially in these type of times, not just for our community, but you know, when we look at the health factor that's out there, and the challenging thing we have right now is, from what I'm seeing, this might be controversial or not, I'm not seeing us as brokers coming together as much as we should. We see the SIP comes in. I know in the early days, we were probably one of those companies too, just trying to navigate through this. But as brokerages, we have to come together, because if some of us are embracing the SIP for what it is about, for protecting our communities, and we're not showing occupied properties, and we've got somebody else out there showing occupied properties, that doesn't do any of us any good, and it impacts our entire industry. So I would really like to see us as brokerages come together in that realm. But again, for the agent standpoint, just be more creative, really embrace technology, look at how you're going to bob and weave where, hey, you can't do public open houses. How am I going to do this? Am I going to embrace doing Facebook Live and those type of things? So it's my opinion on it.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Nancy?
Yeah, I think, you know, Mark and Chris made some great points there. I think that this is really a time, this is going to be interesting to see how agents really truly adapt coming out. And I believe truly that those who adapt will thrive. Those who are able to pivot, make changes in how they operate. But this has also been a gift given to us in the brokerage leadership roles, in that I think our agents now more than ever understand our need to adapt and change. And so whether it's adapting and making bold decisions when it comes to staff, and changing maybe the offerings we give to staff, and really looking at how to best bring value to our agents. Is it, you know, one program we changed actually before this is we changed a role into more of a regional marketing coach for one-on-ones. Those marketing coaches, we have six in my region, have been incredibly busy during this time doing one-on-one coaching sessions with our agents. That's huge value, but it was taking a position that was tried and true in an office and making a shift. Those kinds of big decisions are important. And then the one, you know, glaring one, obviously, is the challenge to traditional bricks and mortar, right? And I think this is our opportunity to make really significant changes there. We all, maybe exception of you, Don, we all suffer from having this enormous overhead of our office spaces. And I think that this is going to open the eyes of our agents to understand that, hey, I work out of the house. I don't need to have the big luxurious office space. And so I really think that this is going to give us all an opportunity to make those bold moves and changes with as it relates to our operating expenses. So again, I think the overall message for agents is those who adapt will thrive, those who are really leaning in right now. I've talked to agents of mine who I've said, what's happening for you? How are you going to come out of this? And they said, what? I'm going to retire. I don't want to do this anymore. So that is coming to light too, of those who see change and don't want to make it and are accepting that. So I do believe that in a way, this has been a gift, kind of a sick gift, but gift all the same, not only for us all professionally, but for us personally as well.
Right. Thank you, Nancy. And we're going to get Brian and Don real quick. And then just for the sake of letting the participants know, what we'll do is we're going to just do another quick series of questions. And then we're going to jump to, I know there's a handful of questions that the participants have for the panelists. So we'll take, just so the participants know, give us about another 5-6 minutes and we'll get to those questions. So if you want to finish up for the same, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Real quick, I'll keep it super quick. We're going to continue to focus on engaging the agents for the after COVID market. We went into this with a lot of head of steam and great momentum. And I think that we've had this stall and we're going to come out of the gate strong, and we're going to focus on keeping our agents engaged. The secondary piece and most important piece, in my opinion, is staying focused on providing a phenomenal client experience. Today at 1 o'clock, I've got the Intero Now show, and we're going to literally interview agents that are providing an amazing client experience in this environment. And so what we're going to do in the very short term is make sure that our clients are taken care of. And from there, when we come out of this, keeping everybody engaged is going to help us continue to grow and build when this is all done.
Very good. Thanks, Brian. Don?
Yeah, well, I would say ultimately, any cost that does not directly add value to the consumer has to be considered suspect. Even before this crisis, I think a lot of us were looking on the horizon at other new entries into the real estate space and wondering how we were going to stay competitive. And so, you know, I just think of it in the context of, does that expense add value to the consumer, or does it provide a system and a tool for our agents to better serve the consumer? And if you can't answer affirmatively to those two things, then you really have to question whether that expense should exist. If you think about it in those terms, then I think you're going to be able to adapt and provide value to the consumer, which is ultimately, you know, our job, and then you'll survive and prosper for sure.
Great, thank you. What I want to do lastly, kind of real quickly, if I could have everybody kind of give a, as quickly as you can, speaking of that, I think it's a perfect segue. I wanted to make sure we talk a little bit about the consumer and the customer and who we direct dealing with. I mean, this was kind of a two-part event, and we want to address the industry and what you guys are doing to adjust and adapt to succeed, but also the direct effect it has on the consumer. The radio show and the podcast we do, you know, it's primarily a consumer-based show. So we're going to repurpose this, and we're going to put it on the podcast later this week so the consumers will be listening to it as well. So if I could have each of you quickly, as we kind of summarize this show, give me just a real quick, what would you say, you know, to the agents, and what would you say to the consumer about, you know, staying positive, we'll get through this, whatever message you might have. If you could quickly kind of each of you give me your part, kind of parting positive take, I'd appreciate it. Jordan, maybe give us a start.
Yeah, sure. I remain optimistic, and I think that the key, and I was saying this even before COVID-19, I think when I was out talking to Nancy's agents late last year, is that we need to not just sell the home, but sell the home ownership. The benefits of home ownership, it's the tried and true way that you accumulate wealth in this country. It's why, you know, kids of high school dropouts like me can end up, you know, working in, you know, at CAR and doing these outreaches and stuff like that. And that remains, I think, unchanged. The other thing again is I think it doesn't hurt to stress that this isn't a 2008, 9, 10 all over again. I think for a lot of people who are under 40, you know, that's the only recession they've really lived through in terms of being an adult and having that in their history. And so we think of you know, recessions as equating to 40 to 50% declines in home prices. And again, I just don't think that the negative fundamentals are all baked in the way that they were back in 2008 that really created all those snowball effects. And so, you know, I would say that the benefits of home ownership are still there, and B, I think there's going to be a big gap with expectations where buyers think prices should be getting slashed and sellers see this as a temporary deal and would rather just take their home down for a month or two rather than do a 20% concession. And so rates are still low. And from a long-term standpoint, it's the second best time to buy a home besides, you know, second to only having bought 20 years ago.
Very good. Thank you. And by the way, I was one of those old guys. I remember those 12.5% interest rates in 1987.
Right.
So I fit that category for sure. Rick, real quick, to the market, to kind of the agents and then the consumer, what's your message?
Well, just that this too shall pass. I mean, everybody thought the world was coming to an end during the financial crisis, and look what property values have done since. You know, when I talk to people, and I rarely give advice on when somebody should buy, but if you think about it, with rates trending toward literally historic lows, people that want to hold off, I would argue that at some point in the not too distant future, you've got a much higher likelihood of rates going up than home prices coming down.
Yeah.
And if you think about it from an affordability standpoint, they're the same. You know, if values drop 10%, but rates go up 15%, well, guess what? You're paying more, right? So I think that depending on how effective we can be at reopening the economy and putting people back to work, I think that this is going to be more V-shaped, and with rates as low as they are, I think you're going to see a lot of people concluding that now's the time to buy, and you might see something snap back. And if people start pulling their houses off the market, well, there goes the supply side, and that's going to make prices go up as well. So, you know, that's my – and then the other thing I tell them – I tell this to our agents and the consumers is, look, don't wait. Get in. Get your stuff in. Let us get you pre-approved. Let's do all this prerequisite work.
Yeah.
Because when things start going again – you're going to see a lot of activity and you're going to be in line. Why not be in front of the line? let's get that pre-approval work done so you're poised and ready to take advantage of whatever opportunity comes your way. You don't have to do anything, but let us do the work for you. And one last point I wanted to make is, you know, on the previous question of what you're telling your agents, what we're telling ours is, you know, in lending, it's different, right? We're in a little bit of a sweet spot with rates low. You can work very effectively from your home. The refi opportunities are off the charts right now. So there's a huge draw for loan agents to really start to focus on refi activity, which, you know, I would too, you would too, if there were that many opportunities. But do not ignore your real estate partners out there and what their needs are, because this is the time to take market share, because a lot of lenders are, you know, shifting their focus to refinance activity. And to the extent we can make sure our real estate partners understand that we are there for them and we're ready to take this next leg up with them, it'll pay us off in spades later on. So that's a big message that we're extending to our agents.
Great. Thank you, Rick. Well, we have two so far. It says, get out there and buy. Nancy, what do you say? How are you going to finish this?
You know, it's funny. I think for the agents, I think the message is those who adapt will thrive. Those who are working now in their business will thrive. And more now than ever, you have to be that solid rock, that trusted advisor for your clients. What I really think is that agents need to hear this loud and clear. People you never expected wanted to relocate or move are now going to be doing that. Yesterday, it was like cousin real estate day for me. I had two cousins on either coast calling and saying, you know, I've been sitting in my house and I really think I need to move. Or
yeah, good point.
One said, hey, you know, got laid off. This is the time. We want to go and pay cash for something completely out of the area. So lifestyle moves are going to be, I think, what you're going to see toward this fall when we come through this. I think for the consumer, the reminder that we went into this extremely strong. I mean, I look at the first quarter, the beginning of our first quarter, we were going in crazy this second quarter. We were at a first quarter experience like we hadn't seen in a very, very long time. So the consumers need to remember that we came into this strong. We will get through this strong. And again, this is forcing a lot of people to rethink home ownership as far as their living situation and what do I want to do long term. So how much time at home, you're rethinking, do I like this house or the people in it? So don't lose sight of that, agents, and that you need to be in constant communication with your clients.
All right, very good. Thank you, Nancy. Brian, direct to the agents and then consumer, what's the message? What's the positive word to them?
Thank you, Joe. The message to agents is now more than ever, realtors are essential. Clients need professional realtors now more than ever, and the cream will rise to the top. So that's the message out to the industry and the realtors out there. For the consumer, you know, the message is Intero is prepared to help you now and well into the future. We're financially stable. Our leadership is local. Our agents are educated. And we're focused on staying safe while delivering outstanding results. So that's the message that we're putting out there.
Very good. So you're saying get out there and buy and sell, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think that really, if you look at the statistics, the last 30 to 45 days have kind of shrunk down to about a November, December kind of market, maybe a little worse than a normal November, December. So I think this thing plays out where we come out of the gate in first or second gear. And then by, you know, a couple 60, 90 days in, we're back to third or fourth gear. In Silicon Valley, especially, most of the jobs, or a lot of the jobs of those that are actually buying homes, have not been impacted. My kids all work at high tech companies in the Bay, and they're all working, and they're also potential home buyers.
Yeah.
Millennial world, and so I think that we're going to be okay in Silicon Valley. I think we got to be prepared for a first or second gear start, and then. Switching it into third and fourth gear pretty rapidly. So that's my prediction for the consumer as well.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. Don, quick positive message here to both the agents and then the consumer.
Sure. Well, first of all, I would say to the agents that because this has been so disruptive to the economy and the housing market as well, whatever actions that you take now, you'll get double credit. So take those actions with intention and take a lot of them. Regarding the market, I would say that everybody, whether it be an agent or a consumer, should become a student of it because it is just moving so rapidly. Conditions are changing every week, if not every day. And so just do your best to study it. And then ultimately, as the consumer, I think you really have to look at it from your own personal perspective. As Rick pointed out, if you're acquiring a personal residence, now is a historically great time with which to do that.
What a great.
On the other hand, if you're nearing retirement and you have a real estate portfolio of a lot of rentals, it may be time to divest and mitigate some risk. And so I think you just have to evaluate your circumstance with your real estate professional. Fortunately, you know, these decisions are big and sensitive, especially right now, so we can be of great service to you.
Very good. Thank you, Don. Mark, what's your message?
For our agents, you know, agents and consumers, you got to focus on the silver lining here, right? I mean, this is an opportunity for us to streamline and look at where we're at. And fortunately, we're in Silicon Valley, which is going to allow us to rebound a little better than some other areas. For our agents, really, you know, we've got all of our clients sitting at home. Reach out to them, talk to them. Life events are still happening. I think the stats are still showing people are buying and selling. So focus on reaching out to your clients, make those care calls, check in with them. They're hungry for information right now. So be that trusted advisor for them, reach out to them and show your value and be prepared when this is over to really take it on. I mean, Don having that double credit, I think that's an excellent way to look at this. Mm-hmm. For the consumer, you know, if we look back to 2008, I mean, yes, everybody's impacted by the virus in one way or the other at this point, but it's not going to go on for 3 or 4 years. You know, it might be 6 to 9 months, whatever it is. We're going to look back at this. I believe it's going to be more of a blip situation that we're going to talk about. It's going to be in the history books forever. But as far as our local market right now, interest rates are lower than they've ever been. The buyers that are out there are still those buyers that were there before, and they're still going to be out there. The supply and demand is still extremely strong. So take advantage of that. Look at this as a time of opportunity and move forward. And the stats, everything that we're showing in the marketplace right now is the market is still humming right along. Mm-hmm. We don't want to underestimate it, but you know, focus on the silver lining of things. And it's a great time to be out there buying right now and selling.
What a great. Thank you, Mark. Chris, finish up. What's your message today directly to those agents and then to the consumers that we rely on every day?
Hey, Joe, thanks again. This is really great.
Thank you.
I appreciate being part of this very stimulating conversation. So for agents and buyers, my message is being a contrarian can serve you quite well over time. And so when I was thinking about getting into the real estate business in 1991, we were in about 3 recessions or so prior to this. And I remember asking my dad, who had a little more wisdom than me, hey, Dad, all these people are leaving the real estate business. It's a bad time. Maybe I shouldn't get in the business. He said, this is the best time to get in the business because everybody's leaving.
That's right.
And it turns out that's actually worked out pretty well for me over the last 30 years. So right now the disruptors are being disrupted. So the fluff, the discounters, the experimental models and brokerages, there's going to be less competition coming out. Mm-hmm. So this means a greater reliance by the clients and community on the most thoughtful, professional, engaged agents. And something I said a couple of years ago, and I'm kind of surprised 20 years post 2000, this is the case, but the heart remains at home. And what I mean is there remains something about the relational heart of real estate, which cannot be extinguished by an application or some theoretical all-in-one end-to-end platform. And that's being proven again right now as we're going through this, you know, crazy cycle. Also remember, Silicon Valley and the SF Bay Area are always the first out of the downturn. Mm. We also talked about acceleration of the future at the start of this conversation. And so what that's going to mean is more innovation in the San Francisco Bay Area. So because of that acceleration, there's not going to be less. There's actually going to be more innovation in our area, which again is going to impact the longer term benefits of home ownership in this area specifically.
Very good. Thank you. Let's jump quickly to the comments or chat here. Let me try to go back to, boy, some of these questions are pretty long. Are you guys, as panelists, are you able to see these, or is it just me? Can you guys see those?
I can't.
Okay.
You might have Rick address the FICA score regarding forbearance. I think that's a pretty sensitive issue. A
couple of long questions, but maybe Rick, you could quickly address that. I know you talked a little bit about the forbearance, but a couple of questions kind of about lending. I think the perception, unfortunately, with the media and the market still is, you know, there's no money out there. You can't get a loan. You can't get jumbo. So unfortunately, maybe you could dispel those myths a little bit quickly and let the address that.
So you want me to talk about the jumbo environment?
The jumbo quickly, and then also maybe kind of some of the FICO changes, specifically to jumbo, because again, Silicon Valley, I mean, it's hard to avoid in the purchase market. You can't avoid it unless you're putting 40 or 50% down. You are going to be borrowing jumbo money. So yeah. All of us on the panel, including the consumers listening to this, are, you know, want to know, have we seen the worst of jumbo? Is it all gone for sure? Or is it going to come back? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think that jumbo will come back a lot quicker than non-QM. And I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about non-QM. There's more unconventional borrowing because the aggregators in that space have all gone out of business, literally done. So jumbo, it's about balance sheet investors. It's about the big banks that want to, bring into larger loans. As people have larger deposits, there's a huge advantage to banks to bring those in. And I think what any disruption you're seeing right now is temporary.
Okay.
Once we get on the other side of the unknowns, that you're going to see the jumbo lending come back. The aggregators are gone, but the balance sheet investors like the big banks are still, and they're still doing it now. I mean, Wells Fargo disappeared, but we're still doing with Chase. We're still doing with PenFed. I mean, there's a whole bunch of banks that we're still doing jumbo lending with. So I think that that's going to come back a lot sooner than the non-QM.
Okay.
As far as the FICO goes, you know, those rules are being written as we speak. Generally, the way it works is when you go into a forbearance with the CARES Act, there's going to be something on your credit that says forbearance, but it's not going to mark you as late. It's not going to mark you as having missed payments because those are the rules. Now, currently, when you get on the other side of a forbearance, say it's 6 months from now, your options are to make one big, gigantic lump sum payment to get yourself caught up. Well, who the hell can do that? I mean, that's kind of silly. Or you can get caught up by increasing your payment, 50% or 20, whatever you can agree to. But the important thing is, at least today, you agree to those terms to get out of forbearance and get caught back up, and then you miss one of those payments. Now your credit is impacted. So I think that that's the much bigger deal and something that really should be talked about when they're talking about how easy it is to skip payments. And these companies, like I want to say it's B of A, you literally go on their site and you go, yeah, I want to skip the next 6 months, and it's done. And without ever talking to somebody and having that explained to them. And I think that that's a huge disservice to the consumer, unless the government comes in and changes the rules, which they haven't yet. So I think what you're likely to see is people getting a hall pass on not making payments. Some of them are really going to need it. Some won't, because we're not allowed to ask for their hardship or anything like that. But then on the other side of it, if they don't make good, then there's going to be an impact to their credit, and that's going to be very damaging to them, and it's really a shame.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Yeah, there's a bunch of comments. I'll just say that we have a bunch of comments about people enjoyed the show, the feedback, hearing from everybody. It's great to see the community and all the brokers coming together. There's a lot of positive notes and comments about that, which is good. The other question here, and there's a couple of different ones, and I think I'll throw it out to you guys who wants to answer it, is it came up a few minutes ago, but it's worth talking about. You know, technology, there was this big disruption and, you know, the billions of dollars that was coming in to disrupt not only real estate, but lending. And so not to go too deep into the weeds, but maybe I could get a couple comments from you guys in terms of some of the, you know, some of the companies that were coming into the market, the iBuyer programs, the Open Doors, and I could go on and on. How is that now? How is this? I guess two questions real quick, and this is a couple of questions we're getting, so I'll try to summarize it. When we had those changes and those adjustments, I know it represented a small percentage of the business, but the thought was it was going to grow and it was going to change the way real estate was conducted and transacted. Do you guys see that anything changing now because of this or coming out of it? Will we go back to the same? Does that make sense?
Joe, can I interrupt real quick? I apologize to you and the panelists. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I've got a hard stop at 12:30, so I'm
going to thank you, Rick.
A couple of minutes, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
This is Chris, Joe.
Yeah.
So to that question, you know, look, there's long been an oversimplification of disruption, and there's been an underestimation of what it takes to scale the uniquely personal, relational, crazy real estate business. And so I think the fact that billions upon billions have been invested, and the fact that that relationship between agents and clients, notwithstanding, you know, technological advancements in how transactions are, you know, communicated and performed, but for the most part, you know, when you get down to it, that relationship, you can't, it's very difficult to scale personalization. And so you can't go to a drop down menu on a website to basically navigate through all these different situations. And so many of these startups required mind-boggling amounts of capital when capital was free and just flowing, right? To even like sustain and exist. And like an iBuyer model, I mean, you're talking like super expensive to scale, very, very thin margins on the back end. And so, you know, you have to wonder, I don't know that even, you know, Zillow knows what business they're actually in, right? And so, you know, they're out, Redfin's out, Open Door, which is, that's their model, is iBuying. They're done for now. I personally question whether those are really going to come back anytime soon at scale, because of the immense capital that it requires to fund those things. And so some of this was already, this is the acceleration of the future. The cleansing that's happening now is gonna happen anyways. It's just happening faster because of COVID-19. And so like, if you look at WeWork, for example, I mean, everybody knows it's gonna come out in a movie. It's gonna be like the Big Short movie, right? And so, you know, a lot of these models promising, you know, masquerading as tech are not really tech. If it takes a lot to scale and the margins are really, really thin, it's hard to really say you're worth multi-billions or 6 billions or 40 billions or 100 zillion. You know, and the market woke up to that with WeWork and said, we're not going for this. And so this started before COVID-19. COVID-19 just accelerating that future faster. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's my kind of, I'm probably a little too deep in it, but that's my.
Well, and to Chris's point, I think that COVID-19 certainly threw a wrench into the plan, right? Sure. And I think that the iBuying concept, it was able to thrive, or I wouldn't say thrive, or take root as a result of the health of our current economy. Right. And the fact of the matter is it totally dead in the water long term? No, but it is going to be a niche of our market, and that's what it will always remain, is a niche of our market. It's going to be like the Help You Sells, right? I mean, Help You Sells has always been there, and it's sometimes it's more popular and other times it's not. And I think iBuying is very much going to take that on. To Chris's point, you can't, it's very hard to disrupt that relational sale and what people are really truly looking for in that trusted advisor. So I think, again, I don't think it's completely dead in the water for those companies, but I don't think they're the big disruptors of the industry that some people or the press made them out to be necessarily. I think that they were an alternative that was gaining some traction, but it was by no means going to eclipse the traditional model.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, Nance. Yeah. Anybody else have any thoughts about that?
Joe, I got to jump real quick, but I would say fundamentally what we're going to have is just like air travel changed after 9/11. I think the real estate transaction and a lot of different interactions that we've taken for granted are going to be different coming out of this. And that being said, as I'll repeat, real estate agents will be essential. As Chris said, this is a personal transaction. This is not a click of a mouse, and it's not a, you know, it's not a commodity kind of item. And so I think we're as professional real estate agents providing huge value to clients, especially in times that are difficult. That's the advantage we have. And I think that's why the iBuyer program will miss the mark on the majority of the market. And I got to bounce to another call. So thank you all. You guys were awesome. Thanks for being here with me on the panel. Joe, thanks for the invite.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, you're welcome. Right. Yeah, and I'll, if we have another comment too, I know a couple of you guys
want to comment
on that, but yeah, in just a sec. So what I'll say also is we've gotten a lot of feedback about, so maybe in a couple of months we do this again, because it seems to be receptive pretty well by people. But I know a couple of you guys had some other comments about technology and the way it has shaped real estate and how that might change. Go ahead.
So in regards to the iBuyer, you know, that came into our industry with all of this noise or glamour. And as it was pointed out earlier, a lot of that was pretty dependent on very low cost capital. And by the way, Chris, my favorite phrase of the day is it's difficult to scale personalization. That's very, very well said. But I believe, like Nancy, that the iBuyer will be a niche in our business. You know, perhaps it will one day capture 10-15% market share. I do think for the next couple of years, you're going to see them to be pretty quiet, due largely to the disruption. But also, we were very late in the real estate cycle. So if real estate is typically cycling in 7-8 year rotations, we were in the ninth inning. We were in the eighth year. And so, yes, this COVID crisis has brought upon a huge disruption, but if it weren't that, it would have been something else. And so it is the iBuyer market, the iBuyer system is a little bit inefficient. I've had as many as 5,000 agents working for me, literally hundreds of them trying to flip property successfully. For everyone that does, I would say that 98 don't. So for someone to think that they can come from the tech industry and then do that successfully, it's actually pretty difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And because every transaction is unique. And so I think once we see a correction in the marketplace and a settling of the market, you are going to see the iBuyers come back in force. But that's going to be after we've seen a clear bottom of the market and a restabilization of capitalization.
Okay, very good. Jordan and Mark, did you guys have any other quick comments on that?
I would just say in terms of the iBuying thing, that this COVID thing, and I totally agree with Don that it would have been this or something else, but this thing, you know, right now that we're going through really just exposes kind of some of the fundamental questions that I've always had with respect to iBuying, primarily how does iBuying work in a down market, right? Where it doesn't make sense to be sitting on a portfolio of assets that are depreciating. And I think what we've seen over the last month is that it doesn't work in a down market, which is why you have Zillow and Redfin and Open Door all, you know, heavily scaling that back. So I think that was always going to be the question when it comes to iBuying, because at the end of the day, they're becoming, you know, large, you know, property portfolios essentially in the interim between when you buy and sell. And so it's great when you can, you know, just kind of close your eyes and throw it in cruise control and know that you're going to have 8-10% price growth every month. And so even if you don't hit the mark on your evaluations and all that stuff, well, the market's going up anyway, and you can always make that money back on the back end of the deal. And when prices aren't rising at this rapid clip, then, you know, those opportunities obviously aren't there anymore.
Very good. Thanks, Jordan. Mark, did you have any thoughts on that?
Real quick on that, you know, Keller Williams launched the iBuyer program, and there's a reason why they're not launching it out in areas like ours. I mean, they are niche markets in certain geographical areas where you got a house that's $200,000, a consumer is going to look at that. They're going to pay for convenience in that situation. Somebody out here at $1 million, $2 million, $3 million bucks isn't going to take a 5% haircut on that.
Right.
So that's why in our areas, it's not going to work. And again, the relationship side of our business here, which obviously we know is across America or throughout the industry, but it's definitely more enhanced in our area and elevated with that relationship and personal experience of it. So for that reason, I personally never see iBuyer programs really getting much traction in the affluent markets.
Very good. Well, I want to thank all you guys again. It's been a great event. We got a ton of comments here. All really 90% of them are about how much people enjoyed it. Great to see the industry come together. Like to see it again, all those kinds of things. So maybe in a couple months, we revisit this and do it again. Certainly appreciate all of your time, effort, and expertise. I think it's a great service to not only your employees, the community, but also the consumers as well.
Great.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thank you, Joe.
Sounds good, guys. Take care. All the best to you.
Stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Take care.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.